Daf Chof Ches. Just one second, sorry. Chof Amid Beis. And we're up to Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Ada. That's three lines up. Three lines up from the bottom of Chof Amid Beis. Lo Hutar Pasei Beiros Elo Li Ole Regolim Bilvat. Now, if we take this literally, it sounds like if I live, for example, in Bavel, and I'm not going on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael right now, I got a well, and it's out in the middle of Rishus HaRabim, I won't be able to take water out of the well and feed my animals. And I cannot enjoy the benefits of Pasei Beiros. The whole heter is only in Eretz Yisrael, where you have a mitzvah Aliyah LeRegel. I find that very difficult to accept. So let's keep our minds open on this issue. At this particular point, if we translate the Gemara literally, Rabbi Yitzchak is telling us that the heter of Pasei Beiros, which as we said is Paritz Merubala Omed, you're talking about an area that's open on all sides, is limited for those who are obligated in the mitzvah of Aliyah LeRegel. It would not apply in Detroit, Michigan. It would only apply in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara asks a different kash. The Gemara says, "Vatanya lo huter pasi biros el gabi behema bilvad," which sounds like the focus of the heter enjoying this enterprise called pasi biros is the behema. It's not for the ole regel. So the Gemara answers, "My behema behemas ole regolim." It doesn't mean for the sake of any animal on the face of the earth, but for the benefit of the animals of the ole regolim. Now Rashi takes this a step further, and Rashi says that if lo hutru pasei beiros ela legabe behema bilvad, okay, grant you it's behemas ole regolim, but it says ela behema bilvad, it means not for Adam. So, for example, I'm thirsty. I want to draw water from the well surrounded by Pasei Beiros. I'm not allowed to do so. And that's exactly what the Braisa says. Aval Adam, a man, he's not allowed to draw water from the bar in order for him to drink from the bar. And now we go to Chaf Aleph, Omed Aleph. Metapes viola, metapes viore. The poor guy has no choice but to climb down into the bar, scoop up the water, and after he drinks his water, come up on top of the bar. It's interesting that Tosis points out the order is a little bit famished over here. It says, metapes viole, metapes viore. He's going up and then he's coming down. I mean, first he has to go down in order to go up. The Tosis says that this is a style of Brisos and Mishnayos. They like to start on the good foot. You know, Aliyah going up is always a more positive. It's like starting on the right foot. He gives an example. It says the Olam Yikanes Adam Bechitov VeYetzei Bechitov, which means he should come into the city when it's still light out and leave the city when it's still light out. So he's going into the city, and then he's coming out of the city. Well, for example, it says in the Gemara in Shabbos, Bein Hashmashos Keheref Ayin, Ze Nichnas Vze Yotze. So first you want to go in, and then you want to go out. So he says that first it's Aliyah, and then Yiridah. He quotes here in the footnote an insight of the Yaivitz, Rav Yaakov Emden. He wants to say that the reason why he mentions Aliyah first is because Lahoros Sharashus biad Odom Loredis Afilu Kamapi Omin Lochain Nokat Metapes Vi Ola. So he starts with Ola because he wants to tell you that he already went down into the bar and he's allowed to go up, which means he's allowed to go up and down, right? So he went down once, comes up, and then he goes down again. So according to the Yaivitz, this language is indicative of the heter applies multiple times to go in and out. And so he doesn't have to, you know, take exactly the amount of water that he needs on the first round and so forth. All right. So now it comes out, just to summarize, that the halacha pasi biros is a very limited halacha. It applies only for the behema, but not for the adam. And unless you're an excellent climber, and you go down into the well and come up, you're in deep trouble if you want to get water for yourself. Could be that once he has an animal to feed, he's allowed to draw up water and take some of the water for himself. That's not a problem. But if he has no animal right now, his animal's asleep, he doesn't want to wake it up, and he's going to be dehydrated because he can't go, he doesn't know how to climb down. It's very interesting. So the Gemara says, Eini, is this really so? I have another statement, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, O Hutru, Pase, Biroz, El Be'er Mayim Chaim Bilvat. Right, there are two types in halacha, the two categories of collections of water. There's a natural spring that's called Be'er Mayim Chaim. It flows. And that's kosher for all kinds of tevilos. And then there's something called a mikveh. A mikveh means a gathering of rainwater. That water is stagnant. It's not moving. It's because it's not natural. It's not a spring from underneath the ground. Now, Be'er Mayim Chaim has a superior status in halacha. For example, in 2 days' time, when we read Parshas Chukas, we're going to learn about the water that had to be mixed with the Efer, the Parah Aduma. That water had to be Mayim Chaim. And there are many different halachas where the Torah requires Mayim Chaim. A Zav, for example, there are different halachas. Now, this is strange, as the Gemara is going to point out. I'm just trying to dramatize it. The whole purpose and the permissibility of this Pasi Biros is in order to give my animal to drink. And with all due respect to animals, but to upgrade the level of the water that's in the well, and it's got to be this kind of water, it's got to be Be'er Mayim Chaim. For the sake of an animal? The Gemara says, E lebehema, the entire heter, this whole enterprise of Pasei Bros, is to give drink to the animal. Mali Chaim, Mali Mechunasim. What difference it make if it's a spring, a natural flow of water from underneath the ground, or it's Mayim Mechunasim. Mechunasim means, you know, you collect water that comes from the sky with the rains. So the Gemara answers, Be'inan midi dechazi la'adam. Now, what I think is going on here, I could translate the Gemara first literally, and then try to conceptualize it. The Gemara is saying that the requirement of the water, and we've discussed that the water itself creates the pase bros, you know, if the water dries up, the Gemara has a whole suffix, if you remember, it's the middle of Shabbos, the water dries up. So, what good is the pase bros? So, the Gemara says you need water that's royal adam. That's Ruyim Lishtias Adam. Now, I think what the Gemara is saying here is that we're going to upgrade the required description, the status of this water for Pasi Biros, to water that's fit for human drinking. Right, I remember when I was in Italy, for example, you know, you take a walk. I mean, what do you do on Shabbos in Italy, right? So you go for a walk. A lot of good things to see. But of course, you have to make sure that you can drink water somewhere on the way, and there's no Eruv. So you make sure that you plan, you plot out your journey, you know, your spazier, so that at some point, every half hour or so, you'll be able to drink water. But very often, you get to a place where they have, you know, against the wall, this beautiful, you know, thing with a spout. And it says, I forgot what it's called in Italy, in Italian, if you remind me. Anyway, it says, not drinkable. You know, so it's not drinkable water. So we want water that's on a high level. Not the water that comes down from Shemayim and the rains, you know, gather together. That's not drinkable water. But if you have a spring, then you can drink that water. Why are we so careful here? This is what I wanted to conceptualize. To upgrade the water in this well, it's got to be a well with a capital W in the case of Pasi Biros. And I was thinking the following, that the whole entity of Pasi Biros is like standing on a thin thread, a structure on a thin thread. Where are your mechitzos? You see any mechitzos? Oh, yeah, I see four posts over here, you know, six tefachim high, and I mean, 10 tefachim high and six tefachim wide. You know, I see four posts. If it's many amos apart, I might not even see the four posts. I mean, where are the mechitzos here? So we need a certain chashivus, a certain significance to this well, such that now we can say this well is so important to us that it generates mechitzos that are imaginary, that we can't even see them. And the Rabbanan are willing to validate the status of these non-existent mechitzos because of the well. So if the well is generating the mechitzos, then we want a well that has spring water. That's a chashivus. And that's called midi dechazi li'adam. So if this water generates the status of a mechitza on pasim, then we want it to be mayim chashuvim. Now I have a footnote here, and he offers two approaches. Let's see if we can figure this out. He says, "Mishum she'im dole litzorcha behema v'nishtayru shomai mutol adam." Ah, he says, that why do we need roy lachilus adam l'shtiyas adam? Because the man may or may not be able to climb down the well. His access to water is going to be the leftover water from the behema. So, given that need, that is a twofold need. He needs to get water out of this well, A, in order to drink to give drink to his animal, and B, he wants to drink that water himself. So therefore, that's the need which justifies this entity and recognizing the validity of Pasi Biros. It's got to fulfill that need, and that need is a twofold need. And that can only be fulfilled if it's Mayim Chayim. Beis, he says another approach, Etzem tikun ha-pasim ein osim el behema. In fact, the reason why they made this enactment of Pasi Biros is only for the animal. Ach, li'achar shenase, mutal idalos misham, af litzorech shtias odom. So he says the following, that although the original motivating factor to enact and introduce this enterprise called Pasi Biros is the behema, and from that perspective, who needs Mayim Chayim? The animal will be perfectly happy and satiated with Mei Mikvah. But nevertheless, once we set up the Pasi Biros, then even a person is allowed to benefit from the Pasi Biros. And that's what we're going to see a little bit later. We're not ready for it yet, that if a person doesn't have the ability to climb down into the bar, for example, let's say the bar is very wide, and there's no way that he can put one hand on the left and one hand on the right and attach himself to the sides of the bar, then we're going to allow him to draw water for himself. Again, that would in and of itself not have been sufficient just grounds to motivate the Chacham to enact Pasi Baros, but nevertheless, they want to open up the Pasi Baros also for Shtiyas Adam. Now the Gemara says the following, Gufa, we learned in the Brisa, Lo Hutru Pasi Baros El Behema Bilvad, Aval Adam Etapes Viola Etapes Viorit. This is what I discussed. Let's say the well is very wide. Is then a person is not going to be able to lower himself into this bar. Imagine a gigantic wide bar. Is afilu adam nami. Even if there's no behema, he's allowed to draw water for himself out of this bar, to this bein apas, and drink the water. The lo yimale adam mayim v'yitein lifnei behemto. He's not allowed to hold on to a utensil, a pail, and let the animal drink while he's holding on to the utensil. And the reason for that is, as we said, that he might be tempted to push the pail closer to the animal, and the animal might be pulling back into the Rishus HaRabim, and then he'll be carrying the pail from Rishus HaYochid Ben HaPasim to outside the Ben HaPasim. Aval Mimali Hu, he's allowed to fill up the pail with water from the bar. V'shofech lifnei ha-behema, v'hi shosamei lech. And he can present it to the animal, he's no longer holding on to the pail, and the animal will drink from the pail. Or, in the case of the Avus that we discussed, he's allowed to pour the water that he drew from the well into the Avus, and even if the animal is outside of Rishus HaRabim, the animal will drink from this Avus. Maskif lo Rav Hanan im kein maho ilu pase bros. If you're telling me that he's not allowed to draw the water with this pail and give it to his animal, because he's holding on to the pail, is what good is Pasi Bros? What is he gaining over here? He's not going to be able to give his animal to drink. So Gemara says, what kind of question are you asking? Mao ilu lemalos mihem. We want to draw the water out of the bar. Let him find a way of getting the water into the animal. It's problematic if he's holding on to the pail. So what? But how did he get the water out of the bar if not for Pasi Baros? It's a Rishus HaYochid, and it's a Rishus HaRabim. So what was the question of Rav Hanan? Elo, says Gemara, let's re-examine and interpret the question of Rav Hanan. Ma hoil rosho veruba shel para. The Mishnah says that if you diminish the area of the pasim, then you have to have enough of an area for the cow to go into, which is rosho verubo. And obviously, if the Mishnah is schlepping the cow into this area inside the pasi bros, then you're allowed to feed the animal. We're not afraid that he's going to take the pail out of rishus out of Ben HaPasim. In other words, why did the Mishnah go out of its way, says Rav Hanan, to restrict the area, to have the width, the size of the area has to be Rosh HaVeruba Shel Behema within the Pasim. If he's not holding on to the pail, then we don't need Rosh HaVeruba. There's no reason to require Rosh HaVeruba. The whole Rosh HaVeruba requirement was to make sure that he won't walk out of the Bein HaPasim with the pail. But now you're telling me if he's holding on to the pail, then he's not allowed to feed his animal. So obviously the whole mechanism of Bein HaPasim is going to apply when he takes the pail and he puts it down. If he puts it down, who the heck cares where the animal is? Do I care whether the par is inside or outside in the Rishus HaYochid of Ben HaPasim or in the Rishus HaRam outside Ben HaPasim? The Behema has no Isra of Hotzah and Shabbos, last I found out. Amar Abaye, this is going to be very familiar to us from yesterday. Hacha b'mayas kinon. The case of the Brisa that we spoke about, that he's got to drop the pail, that's not talking about an animal that is outside of Rishus, outside of Rishus HaRabim, and it puts its body, its head, and its most of its body into the Bein HaPasim, but rather, we're talking about an animal that's in the house, it's in the pen, and it's got a window that opens up, be'evus, and outside in the Rishus HaRabim has an evus, sha'omed Rishus HaRabim gavoa asura v'rochav amo, so that the evus itself is a Rishus HaRabim. And now what the Brisa wants to tell us is, in that such a case, you might think that since the Avus is a Rishus HaYochid, he's allowed to feed the animal by holding on to the pail and moving it towards the animal's head, which is stretched out of the house, and by carrying it over the Avus, even if he moves towards the animal, he's not violating any Isur, because he's holding on something that's never leaving the Rishus HaYochid. Rosho Nichnas LeBein HaPasim. So it means that he doesn't leave the Bein HaPasim when he takes the pail over onto the Avus. And now he's walking in the Rishus HaRabim, but he's holding on to, with an outstretched arm, he's holding on to his pail over the Rishus HaYochid of the Avus, the Avus. Oh, so that's where the Brisa says that we're not going to allow him to do so. He cannot continue to feed the animal while he's holding the pail. And the reason for that is we're afraid that maybe he'll discover that there's some sort of problem, some sort of defect, if you will, in the Avus. And in order to fix it up, he's going to put the pail down where his feet are in the Rishus HaRabim. And then, after he finishes with the Avus, with the fixing up the Avus, he's going to go back with his pail into the Bein HaPasim, and he's carrying from Rishus HaRabim back into Bein HaPasim, which is Rishus HaYoch. Therefore, he should not take this pail towards the animal over the Avus, but rather he should pour the water or whatever he's doing into the Avus itself, and the water will somehow flow down to the bottom of the Avus on its own, and the animal will drink the water. So we have a very short, concise summary of yesterday's discussion. In any event, the bottom line here is that under those circumstances, he's not allowed to hold on to the pail. Generally speaking, if let's say there's no avus and he wants the animal to drink from the pail, then if the animal enters into Bein HaPasim, Rosha Veruba, and there's no issue of fixing the avus if it gets defected, therefore we don't have any reason to suspect that the animal is going to allure or pull the person, the human being, out into Rishus HaRabim, because the animal is satisfied to drink from the pail being held by the Baal HaMayim, or Baal HaBehem, I should call him, inside the Bein HaPasim. And if you recall, we had two opinions whether or not we require that he hold on to the animal as well. Okay. Now, the Masifta offers an introduction, a short introduction to the next sugya, which deals with what's called the Isur Tchumin. So the Torah says in Shmos Tezayin, Shvu Ish Tachtov Al Yetze Ish Mimkom V'Yom HaShabbos. Person should leave his place on Shabbos. And the Chachamim learned from this that a person not allowed to leave the Makom, in this case it means the city, more than 2,000 Amah on each side, in any direction. And that's called the Tchum Shabbos. That's the area that's designated for Shabbos. You have a radius outside the city of up to 2,000 Amah. Now, if a person is Shoves, means he accepts the Shabbos when he is outside the city, and there are no mechitzos whatsoever, and he has no Erev Tchumim, then all he has in terms of the ability to carry, the permissibility to carry, is a radius of 4 Amos. That's the maximum that he's allowed to carry anything. Now, we're going to talk about what's called medida, which means we have to measure an area. Let's say he's in the city of 2,000 Amah, and on each direction, as we said before, he's allowed to walk up to, but not beyond, 2,000 Amah. He points out here that later in Masechta Erevin, in the fifth parak, he says, we're going to go into detail about how exactly we measure the Tchum of 2,000 Amah around the city. Okay, that's number one. Number two. Now, Kol Bayis, he says, Hayotze Min HaIr, he says that the end of the city, right, the outer boundary of the city from which you're going to calculate 2,000 Amah, depends upon Batin. So if you have contiguous houses, one after the other, when you get to the last house, in whatever direction, that's where you calculate the 2,000 Amah beyond that last house. What happens if you have Sukkot? I'll explain to literally booths that are located on the outskirts of the city, let's say for security purposes. Let's say the municipality will hire a shomer, you know, on the outsides of the city to make sure that if chas shalom there are animals coming in or enemies, you know, we have to notify the sentinels, you know, that are posted there in these little booths. Do those booths extend the city such that we begin calculating 2,000 Amah from the last one of these booths? Now, these booths are called in Aramaic Burganin. I don't have any shortcut to memorize this word. We just have to write it down and memorize it. Burganin. And these Burganin are little Sukkot, they're little booths that were designated for the Shomer. And very often they would build such a booth, erect it, and then take it apart and rebuild it in another area. You know, from a security perspective, it's very good if they would move around the security personnel. So the booths are not really permanent in their place. So what's the status of the Burganin as far as extending the city? Can we extend the city as far as the last of these Burganin? Or do we say, no, the Burganin do not have the status of a bias. It's not permanent. It's here today and gone tomorrow. What is it? Little Red Riding Hood, is it called? You know, I'll huff and puff. Maybe I got the wrong fairy tale. I don't know. Anyway, and I'll blow your house down. So this is a very... What?
That's right.
That's right? Okay. Some... Remembering from the days when I used to...
Three Little Pigs.
Oh, it's called Three Little Pigs. Not Little Red Riding Hood. Okay, Three Little Pigs. and this is the status of the bargaining, you know, I'll huff and I'll puff, so it's not really a permanent bias. So when we talk about continuous batim, we don't include the bargaining. And the right now, when we speak about contiguous houses, what does that mean? Does it mean my house is here, your house is a little closer to the boundary, but it's right next door to my house, and the next house is next door to my house? You know, are you imagining a crowded urban area? You know, in Yiddish we call it kep auf kep, you know, head on head, you know, where one person's head is on top of the next person. What happens if there's an area, an open area between my house and the next house going out of the city? So the maximum distance between one house and the other house is what's called 70 amos umashu. Again, I don't know what the umashu means here, but we'll get into that, but a little bit more than 70 amos. We'll call it 70 plus. Now, when I get to the last house in the city, which is less than 70 plus from the previous house, right? Then I start walking, and let's say I walk 50 amos or 69 amos or whatever, 69 amos, and I get to a burgenin. Would that allow me to calculate to the next one of the Burgen in another 70 amos? Or do we say that it's the last permanent house, and that's where we start calculating the 2,000 am of Trum Shabbos, and the Burgenin are not part of the calculation? Omer Rab Yirmiyo Bar Ab Omer Rav, Ein Burgenin Bebovel. Okay, so we're talking about the law of Trumin. And for some reason, in Bavel, when you want, let's say you live in Pumpedisa and you want to establish the 2,000 amma allowance of Trum Shabbos outside the outer boundaries of Pumpedisa, wherever you are, Sura, wherever you are in Bavel, so you cannot calculate Burgen. They don't calculate. For some reason, which we'll try to figure out, in Bavel, the Burgenin are very, very temporary. Huff and puff. That we understand, and we'll get to figure out the terrain of Burgenin in Bavel. Why, you know, the more floods in Bavel, whatever it might be, the Burgenin are very temporary. But the next sentence of Rabbi Yirmiyah is very problematic. V'lo pasi biros b'chutz l'aretz. That the whole enterprise and the heter of pasi biros doesn't apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now, I have to add here a very important comment, and that is that Chutz Laretz does not refer to Bavel. I'll read to you a very short translation. He says, Lo Huter Pase Biros Bishara Rotzos Chutz Mi Bavel. So where does the enterprise, halachic enterprise of Pasi Biros apply? And the answer is twofold. Number one, in Eretz Yisrael, and number two, in Bavel. Now again, once you accept this premise here of Rabbi Yirmiyah, then this whole business about Ole Bavel falls apart. The heter of Pasi Biros applies in Chutz Laretz, but only in Bavel. So again, on the one hand, we are downgrading Bavel as far as Trum Shabbos is concerned because their Burgenin are temporary in nature. But we're upgrading Bavel in terms of Pasi Biros. This, despite the fact that there's no Aliyah L'Regel. So obviously we're not helping the pilgrims. In Bavel, we're helping Jews who want to give water and drink to their animals or maybe to themselves, and the well is out there in Rishus HaRabim. So we're going to build Pasei Biros. So the Gemara asks Rav Yirmiyah to explain what's going on here. So he says the following, Burgenin b'bavel lo, d'shchichei bidki, because there's a lot of water and bodies of water around Bavel, for example the Euphrates River and so forth, and they flood very often. So the Burgenin, which were very cheap kind of housing, if you know what I mean, it was just like what we call today. It's what we called it when I was in the army. We called it a budka, if you've ever heard that word. It's probably an Arabic word, I don't know. Anyway, this budka is here today and gone tomorrow, you know, because it floods all the time. So it's a very temporary kind of structure. And again, it was cheap as borscht, so nobody cared about the fact that, you know, there were waters coming here and there and elsewhere. They had to set up these booths in order for the Shomrim to watch, but they knew that, you know, come back in a week and it's gone. It's flooded, it's inundated. So you can't use that as a bias for Tchum Shabbos. Upasi biros bechutzlartz lo, delo shchichi mesifta. Right? Mesifta. Which means that there were no Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz in Chutzlartz, except for Bavel. But in the balance of the earth at that time, when Chazal made this takana, there were no Talmidei Chacham. And in order to set up a Pasei Biros, we need a certain level of scholarship. There are many different nuances of halachas, right? We have a whole parak here in Erevin dedicated to Pasei Biros. And if there are, I'm reading to you the Hebrew, he says, Lo Mitzuyim Shab Talmidim HaHolchim Lumo Torah Me'ir ve'ir. So this kind of thing where, you know, these scholars would go from place to place to learn in this yeshiva and that yeshiva, that didn't apply in Chutz Loretz. And therefore, lo itiru l'taltel pasei biros. They only recognized pasei biros either for the ole regolim in Eretz Yisrael or for the Talmidim in Bavel, who would travel from place to place, from one city, from Pupadisa to Narda, and so forth and so on. Aval Ipcha Avdina. In other words, there's a heter of Pasi Beros in Bavel. There we will recognize the entity of Pasi Beros, because Mitzuyim Sham Talmidim, and Burgenin in Chutz Loretz, we are relying on them to extend the Tchum Shabbos, because lo mitzuyim shom shitfonot, because they're in most of Chutz Loretz. Again, I don't know what would be, you know, in Columbus, Ohio, on the Columbus River. I don't know, but if you find an area on the face of the earth where there are many, often floods, you know, the floodings, you know, Florida, certain areas of Florida, you know, got floods left, right, and center. And therefore, the Burgenin, even in Florida, would be like the Burgenin in Bavel. But as a general rule in Chutz Loretz, when you're calculating the end of the city and Alpayim Amah for Tchum Shabbos, you can rely on Burgenin. Because, you know, you build a sukkah over there in a dry area like in Phoenix, Arizona, you'll come back in 50 years and you'll still see the same old Burgenin, you know. There'll be somebody who scratched, you know, graffiti on the walls of the thing, you know, 1952, you know. Because there are no floods over there. So that's in Eretz Yisrael in general. Bavel is a very floody area, so you can't rely on Burgenin. That's as far as Tchum Shabbos. Ike Diamri, there's another version and a transmission of Rabbi Yirmiyahu. Om Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba Amar Rav, Ein Burgenin upasi biros lo bebavel velo bechutz laretz. Now, we're saying that Bavel is excluded, according to this Ikar Diami of Lishna Basra, on two counts, not only as far as Burgenin to calculate Chutz L'Tchum, but even as far as the enterprise of Pasei Biros. And the Gemara explains, Burgenin put Bavel low, and the reason for that, just one second, sorry, Dishchiche Bidke, because we have these floods. B'chutzlatz nami lo, Dishchiche Ganve, Now again, I told you before that the Burgen in itself, the structure, is worthless. It's not so worthless. Apparently the Ganovim would take it away. Maybe they would use the wood and sell it for firewood, but they the thieves were galore. And therefore, when it comes to Burgenin, according to this Iker D'Amri, lo b'chutzlaretz, not because of inundations, of floods, but we have to exclude Burgenin in the calculation of Tchum, and it's this, the end of the city, because Burgenin are unreliable. The thieves just carry them away. So where are Burgenin reliable? According to this gear, so it says, Ein Burgenin lo b'bavel lo b'chutzlaretz. Apparently in Eretz Yisrael there weren't that many thieves. I don't know. But in Eretz Yisrael it sounds like you could rely on Burgenin. That's the impression I get. Now let's talk about Pasi Biros. And according to this Girsa, even Bavel is excluded from Pasei Beros. Upasei Beros lo, Deshkiche Maya. Interesting. I'm a little disappointed. I thought we're going to exclude Bavel because there's no Aliyah L'Regel. Forget it, Berzon. You're working with the wrong premise here. Pasei Beros is an institution that was enacted by the Chacham to help anybody who needs water, whether he's on his way to Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim for the regel or not. But Lo Yitzur, there's no need for water because there's plenty of water here, there, and elsewhere. It's even flooding the land, like in Bavel. Therefore, the Rabbanon are not going to allow recognizing and validating the Pasei Beros enterprise in Bavel. There's no need for it. Mitzuyim Shami says, Mayim B'Shefa. Oh. I wonder about Mitzrayim. You know, Chazal say about the Nilus that it would always flood Mitzrayim. They had plenty of water in Mitzrayim. You know, some of the lands that are most guilty of persecution of the Jews throughout history are very laden with natural resources. They got plenty of water. And the Arabs have plenty of resources, plenty of oil, and so forth. You know what I'm saying? That's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw it. I don't know. So therefore, there was no heter pasi biros, and there was no need for allowing access to water. Ubechutzlaretz nami lo. In Chutzlaretz, where there's an average water supply, meaning it's not b'shefa, it's not wherever you turn you got water, nevertheless, the Rabbanim did not recognize the institution of Pasei Beros because lo shchichim esifta, because the Talmidim and the Talmidei Chachamim were not available in Chutzlaretz. So as far as lo shchichim esifta, Bavel would have been a perfect candidate for Pasei Beros. The reason why it's excluded is because the need for Pasei Beros to be matir drinking from the wells was non-existent in Bavel. It was a shefa of mayim. In Chutzlaretz, there's no shefa of mayim, and therefore that should justify the institution of Pasei Beros. But Pasei Beros needs another condition, and that's called shchiche mesifta. And that we don't have in Chutzlaretz. So let's see if we can calculate the nafkemina between the first Lishna and the second. According to the first Lishna, Burgenin in Chutzlaretz are acceptable. Why? Because we're only worried about floods. According to second Lishna, Burgenin are unreliable even in Chutzlaretz, even though there are no floods, because they're Ganovim. And the second Nafkemina between the two Lishonos is going to be with regard to Pasei Beros. According to the first Lishna, all we need for Pasei Beros is Shchichei Mesifto. We're going to therefore exclude only Chutz Laretz, but Bavel is included in Pasei Biros. According to the second Lishna, it's not enough to have Shchichei Mesifto. You have to have a real bona fide need, and that doesn't exist in Bavel, and therefore the institution of Pasei Biros was not validated in Bavel, because there's plenty of water b'shef. Amalei Rav Chizda L'mari B'reid Rav Huna B'reid Rav Yirmiya Baraba Amri Asisu mi barnash lebeik nishta de Daniel da havi tlosa parsi bishabsa. He says the following: I heard about you who live in Barnash, and you come on a trip from Barnash to Daniel on Shabbos. So this is all going on in Bavel, and there's a place called Daniel. Now here, Don, you're going to have to tell me, I don't know how often you take, you know, your trips to Bavel, but I'm sure you have access to books about archaeology in Bavel, and I'm wondering if there's a place on the map of Bavel, in somewhere in Iran or Iraq, maybe. Where is Bavel? It's Iran today or Iraq? I forget. Iraq. Okay, so I said Iran. So good. This makes it a little easier.
Iran is Persia.
Persia. So we're talking about Iraq. Iraq. Yeah, Iraq is Bavel. In fact, I think in the war in Iraq, some of the American soldiers found some Jewish stuff in Iraq, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's say I would take out a book on archaeology in Iraq. Would I be able to locate a place called Daniel? And maybe there's something left, some remnants of a synagogue in Daniel, because apparently this location in Bavel at the time of the Gemara called Daniel had a major synagogue, and Daniel was called Daniel even by the Babylonians, because that's where Daniel was thrown, you know, he and his friends were at the time of Nebuchadnezzar were thrown into the to the lion's den. Let me just see if he points out anything here. Oh, he writes here, Mokom haya bebavel, Sheshom haya Daniel mispalel, Shenemar, passing in the 6th chapter, Daniel, Vechavin psichin lon, the ilse, you know, Daniel is in Aramaic, Neged Yushalayim, Vezimnin tlosa biyoma hu barech al berchoi, Umatzla, Umode kodem eloka. Okay. So he describes this place called Daniel. In the synagogue of Daniel, there was a group of windows, some sort of very beautiful windows, and they were open on the top floor. You went to see out of the window Yerushalayim, and that's where Daniel would pray 3 times a day. And this is called Beit Knesset Shel Daniel. Rashi has a long description about this here. I just gave you the gist of it.
Rabbi?
Yeah?
I just researched it. Apparently there's a tomb of Daniel, and there's a question as to whether there's possibly one in Iran, which is Persia, and also different places in current-day Iraq. So.
But I'd love to know, see if you could Google a synagogue of Daniel in Iraq. Because really, we don't want to know anything about Daniel. I mean, Daniel moved around, but we want to know where he prayed. I mean, that's the key point for our Gemara. Anyway, so let's go back.
That's what came up.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you can find the place where Daniel prayed, you know, if that synagogue still exists. Anyway.
Yeah, but very often, if you can't, what they learn is that people in the old times used to put tombs on places where something occurred, even though the body wasn't necessarily there.
Right. You know? So maybe the tomb of Daniel was his synagogue. I doubt it, but it's possible. Anyway, let's get back to our Gemara. I see we're running out of time, so I just want to get at least to this last piece of Gemara. And the Gemara says the following: that this group of Jews would travel from a place called Barnish in Iraq, right, in Babel, and they would go to a Beit Knesset in a location called Daniel. Now, the distance between Barnish and the Beit Knesset of Daniel, as you all know, is more than 2,000 amos. So they, in fact, it was Shalosh Parsos, so it was quite a distance. And they would take this trek on Shabbos. They wanted to daven in the holy synagogue of Daniel. Amai Samchisu, how could it be that you're allowed to walk such a distance when you've left the outskirts of Barnish and you're traveling more than 2,000 amma until you show up at the Beit Knesset of Daniel? How'd you do that on Shabbos? And you must be relying on something. Oh, Aburgenin. Apparently, there was a continuous flow of Burgenin, of these Sukkot, as we called it before, that were each one from another within 70 amma. And that would give you a continuous area to extend the boundary of Barnish, such that you would never leave the Tchum. Well, guess what? Ha'omar Avuch Da Avuch, we heard from your grandfather, which is Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba, in the name of Rab, Mishmei de Rav, Ein Burgenin B'Bavel. We don't rely on Burgenin in Bavel. And that's true according to both Lashonos. Because Burgenin in Bavel, since there's always inundations, are very temporary, very flighty, and we don't rely on them for an Erev Tachum, for Tchum. Nothik vi achvile hanu mitavasa. So Mari Berei de Rav Huna went out, right, this is a question that Rav Chizad asked to Mari Berei de Rav Huna, who was part of that entourage, and he went out and he shows Rav Chizda mitavasa. Now mitavasa is an Aramaic word, and in the Hebrew it's called ayoros charevos. There were runes, cities that were in ruin, between Barnish and the Beit Knesset of Daniel, the Mivlaon, that was swallowed up, Bishivim Amo Vishirayim. So in other words, there were a continuous flow, or a continuous ruins, and these ruins were left with mechitzos. And these were the old houses of those cities that were now in ruins, but there was, the cities were still there, so to speak. Meaning, if you took an aerial picture of the city, you would see a full city. I mean, nobody lives there anymore because inside these buildings, you know, it's all blown up or whatever, it's ruins. But nevertheless, the mechitzos of the city, of these houses in the ruined cities, are still standing there. I mean, you can see this all over the world. It's in Europe and even in Asia, I think you'll go to places where you'll see full cities that are in ruins. And therefore, mitztarfos im ha'ir limdo tchum mehen v'hola. So, Burgenin is unreliable in Bavel, because the waters just blow it away. But the ruins are there and here to stay. And if they have mechitzos, they can be considered batim. So in other words, when we talk about bias in order to extend the ear, it doesn't have to be a residential bias. Even a rune, as long as it has mechitzos that's still standing, has the same bias, and that's good enough to extend the calculation of the city. Now, we're up to Amar Rav Chizda, and so the Gemara had quoted Rav Chizda. Rav Chizda now, in an agadic statement, Dorish Mori Bar Mar, my dechsiv, what are we going to do with this pasuk in Tehillim? Lechol tichlera isikates, rechava mitzvasecha mi'od. To every goal I have seen a limit, but your commandments or your Torah is exceedingly broad. Dover zeh omar omro David velo pirsha. Notice this broadness, the vastness of Torah was mentioned by David, but he didn't define it. Amoro Eov velo pirsho. Eov described it, but he didn't get into detail. Amro Yecheskel velo pirsho. Yecheskel spoke about the vastness of the Torah, but he never explained it. Achabo Zachariah ben Odo ben Ido u pirsho. So it's only Zachariah who came and defined it. And now the Gemara is going to go through all the different psukim in Tanakh. Where's Omru? Omru David velo pirsho. Where's Omru? Yecheskel velo pirsho. And we have Yecheskel, and we have Eov, until Achabo Zachariah ben Ido u pirsho. So that in Mitzvah Shem we'll talk about on Yom Rishon. So have a Shabbat Shalom.